So continuing with the evidence regarding devotional principles, chapter 7. Straightforwardness in ordinary dealings and equilibrium in loss and gain. There is a statement in the Padma Purana, persons who are engaged in Krishna consciousness should never be disturbed by some material gain or loss. Even if there is some material loss, one should not be perturbed, but should always think of Krishna within himself. The purport is that every conditioned soul is always absorbed in thinking of materialistic activities. He has to free himself from such thoughts and transfer himself completely to Krishna consciousness. As we have already explained, the basic principle of Krishna consciousness is to always think of Krishna. One should not be disturbed in material loss, but rather should concentrate his mind upon the lotus feet of the Lord. The devotee should not be subjected to lamentation or illusion. There is the following statement in the Padma Purana. Within the heart of a person who is overpowered by lamentation or anger, there is no possibility of Krishna's being manifested. So straightforwardness in ordinary dealing, equilibrium, loss and gain. Or we won't be straightforward if we think there's some loss, you know, we will lose. If we understand Krishna's taking care, and everything will, you know, go according to what Krishna wants, then we can be straightforward in ordinary dealings. Otherwise, then there's a difficulty in this. And then equilibrium and loss and gain means that one understands that we are not the gainer or the loser. That it is Krishna's material energy, it's Krishna's different activities are being performed, and we simply have to take part in these things. It is only when we think it is ours, our loss, our gain, then we're not being, we miss the association of the Lord. We're not involved in his pastimes. It's indirect pastimes through the material energy. But if we are engaged in his service, then this is part of the Sankirtan mission. And then what will happen, that's up to him, how he wants it to go, how he wants it to happen. See, if everything goes perfect, that's one thing. But then many times people will not think that this applies to us. Right? Very practical example is that when you give examples many times from the stories of Bhagavatam, devotees will think this has nothing to do with the present day. Because it's in another yuga. You know, if they're kings, they're wearing crowns, they're, you know, in big palaces and all this, they're speaking Sanskrit, they're in India. So you put all this together, it has nothing to do with the reality of today. So they will think that present day, this is reality. Because this is the sphere of our gain and loss. So that is reality. I do this, I gain, I do this, I lose, so therefore this is my reality. But reality is actually Krishna's reality. If we're not connected with Krishna, what we're dealing with is not the reality, but what we think as reality. Right? Just like, you know, a small child, they have their vision or view of things. And then because of that, then when they grow up and they see things work differently, they're very bewildered. Because they always thought their reality is the real reality. But the adults say, no, there's a different reality. You know, it means the material world is harsh, it doesn't always go the way you want. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that are different. Kids don't understand reactions to anything. They do something, they don't understand it gives a reaction. They push their little brother out the first floor window. They do not understand the laws of gravity and, you know, the G-forces at work and physics and all that. So they're very surprised when their little brother gets hurt, you know. I mean, because in Wile E. Coyote, nothing happened to him and he fell off 2,000-foot cliff, you know, like that. So it's like it doesn't make any sense to them because they have their own view of the world. So in the same way as when we're in the materialistic consciousness, then we have our own view of the world. And we don't see it otherwise. But the real reality is Krishna's pastimes, his Sankirtan mission. So when we take part of that, it's going to go the way Krishna wants it. So So we'll say, oh, it's so perfect, Dan, they're in a different yuga, everyone works so nicely, this, that, blah. It doesn't relate to what happens today. You know, we have so much difficulties, and you have to go out and work and get money and this and that and so many different things. So therefore, we see that in the pastimes, Krishna arranges that everything does not go materially perfect. You know? Because otherwise, and we'll say it has even less to do with reality. As it is, the Pandavas go through more trouble and anxiety in that than we'll ever run into. Right? I mean, we don't have the whole government down on our case and exiling us and, you know, trying to, you know, do something to our family and take everything away from us and stuff like this. And not only that, they pester us year after year after year. Right? So, in that condition, they're still able to remember Krishna. They're still able to be Krishna conscious. You know, they're still eating, amazingly enough, right? They don't even have a job. They're still eating. You know, they've still got clothes to wear, you know. And because of their devotion, Krishna is coming and staying with them. So then these show that, no, okay, it's not that only ideal situations one can be Krishna conscious. Prabhupada, he gets on a boat with 40 rupees. 40 rupees, right? I mean, you can't even get in a taxi nowadays for 40 rupees. He got on a boat to America, 40 rupees. Goes to America, starts a whole preaching mission, doesn't even spend the 40 rupees, right? Comes back to India and taxi driver takes it, right? Like that. So he goes and he does all these things, so much trouble, he does it alone. He's 70 years old. It's not his country, right? He has no money, no contacts, nothing. He starts a worldwide mission. So then we can't complain about going somewhere, you know, to some city and trying to start a center there. You know, Prabhupada's done more amazing things. Right? So like this, it's so in the pastimes, then sometimes things will go very nicely, sometimes they won't. It's up to the Lord. Because many things are happening. One is the inspiration and everything for others to see how things are going, or, you know, like this, so that they become more determined. Another thing is us, that we see the Lord working. What is happening? We depend upon the Lord, we see the Lord works. He's taking part, it's happening. Right? And then another is that we ourselves have so many conditionings. And because of these conditionings, then different kinds of activities are needed to purify us from these conditionings. Therefore, we must be have equilibrium in loss and gain. Because if there's gain, Krishna can give unlimited. Right? So if he gives a little bit, we shouldn't become too euphoric. Right? Prabhupada mentioned, devotees were saying, how long, you know, about expanding the mission. And then Prabhupada said that in 18 days we could take over the 18 days, and he knew the system how to do it. But he said the main weakness in it is we wouldn't be able to hold out for 18 days. We wouldn't be able to handle it. You know? So there, that was the weakness. So amazing things can happen, but it's whether we can handle it. That's it. I mean, you take the whole world, that means there's world governments that want to know what are they to do now in the new Krishna conscious, you know, organization. How are they supposed to run their country in the best Krishna conscious fashion? Right? I mean, as it is now, you get a little position or become a member of a committee or something, and immediately, you know, the head becomes, you know, so fat we can't get through the door. You know? So it's like these are the realities. So Krishna's pastimes, this is the reality. And it's just a matter of us accepting that this is it. Krishna has arranged the gain, Krishna has arranged the loss. And so we have to maintain that equilibrium in that. And, you know, be inspired to do our best, because it is the Lord's mission. And we try to do whatever we can. So here, if there's lamentation or anger, there's no possibility of Krishna's being manifest, because Krishna manifests from within the heart. He's in the heart. It's just a matter of us understanding He's there. So if there's too much lamentation or too much anger, these are both from ignorance. Right? Lamentation is from loss. Anger is at other persons or situations that we have lost. So in this way, then Krishna can't manifest because we can't see Him in the equation. When we see Him in the equation, then He manifests. So that's what's going on. So if we're sincere, then we will see that there's nothing more than what we can actually handle or deal with. It may get pretty wild at times, you know, but it doesn't mean that there's not a, it won't work out for our benefit, you know. I mean, very rare anyone can say it's been absolute madhouse for 14 years straight. And that's what the Pandavas had to go through. And that was when it got really serious. You know, before that, they've grown up with Duryodhana and all this one, since when they were in the school. So it's always been a problem. You know, always been a problem. Okay. Any questions on this? So the next point is the demigods. One should not neglect to offer due respect to the demigods. One may not be a devotee of demigods, but that does not mean that he should be disrespectful to them. For example, a Vaishnav is not a devotee of Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma, but he is duty-bound to offer all respects to such highly positioned demigods. According to Vaishnav philosophy, one should offer respect even to an ant. So then, what is there to speak of such exalted persons as Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma? In the Padma Purana it is said, Krishna, or Hari, is the master of all demigods, and therefore he is always worshipable. But this does not mean that one should not offer respects to the demigod. So we're offering respect to everybody. So then the demigods, naturally, they are also part of the everybody's. And they are doing service on behalf of the Lord. Their position, that position must be respected. And they, because they are surrendered persons who are trying to do their best at the Lord's service, then they get the respect for this. So that means we offer respect to any living entity, and then on top of that, we will also offer respect according to their position. So if they have a position where they can, you know, be doing so many things like that, then that must also be seen. So they're means the temple president is there, regional secretary, someone who's senior to us in the community, or whatever it may be, a position that is respected. That itself gets respect. It's a position, just like the mother or the father. It's a position. They're respected. It doesn't matter if they're big personalities or very small. They're respected, you know? Like that, then any administrators, they're respected. Doesn't matter their position. We can say that their qualities aren't so good. But if that is the standard, then why did Sanatana Goswami and the 30 Brahmins, qualified Brahmins, stand up when the Nawab came into the room? The Nawab's just a Malecha Yavana. Right? His only interest is conquering nearby countries. That's his only interest. Like that. But he, so avaricious, no good qualities, doesn't follow the four regulative principles, he's respected by Sanatana and the Brahmins because he is in a position that deserves respect. And as a living entity, they'll deal with him nicely. They don't have to be intimate, but they'll deal with him nicely because he is a living entity. Like that. So these from both these sides, they're there. So the demigods are taking these positions of the Lord, and then seems like it's raining. And then they are to be honored in this way, you know. Looks like we're getting more. Does that make any sense? So this is the position, the demigods, and this means any of our authorities have to be respected. Yes.
Personally, that's something that
They're still dealt with properly because they're in a position of respect, like Lord Brahma. He's running after his own daughter. It's not highly recommended. But his sons don't then just go, hey, look at this old guy, you know. They come up to him and say, you know, sir, this is not proper. You know, you are, you know, the leading personality in our community and all that. Seems to be getting more. Are the lights lit inside that we could go inside? Yeah, just, huh? Yeah, just light the ones in the center and then we'll come in there. You had a question? Someone had a question? Oh, you asked it. Any other questions on this? Or? Yes. Any way to control the tendency towards anger? If one is peaceful, then generally one is not angry. So peace comes when there's basically no material desire. So when we have material desire and that cannot be fulfilled, then we become angry. That's generally what happens. So because of this material desire, then there's difficulty. We're not straightforward. We may get into politics. We may, you know, do so many things like this. And then when we get gain, we're very happy. When there's loss, we're unhappy. Because it's all based on the material desires. So this is something that should be given up. So this separate desires other than Krishna, that must be given up. That is the idea. More will come up in the anger, I think, in I think later, like that. When we get this, there's some explanations, I think, by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that will get into the details of that. But otherwise, basically, the Gita then mentions that point, is that when there's material desire, then endeavor for that. When we don't get it, there's frustration, and then from that comes anger. So that's the general principle when it comes up. Anger used like Arjuna for, you know, the fighting to defend, you know, Krishna's plan or Krishna's mission or like that. That's a different anger, because that's not coming from ourself. That's coming from the Lord, the devotees, the scriptures, you know, there's offenses going on. So that's a different thing. But for ourselves, then we have to be very careful to watch out for that. Because anger comes from ignorance. Ignorance, when we have the identity that I am this body, and that things connected to this body are mine, then anger, that's the false ego. So that gives rise to anger. Sometimes it's thought that someone who's always angry is, you know, very passionate. It's generally, it's very ignorant. It means your endeavor for some passion, anger comes, that's another thing. That's a passionate person. But someone who's always angry at all things and very easily, that's ignorance. Like that. It depends upon if one's getting angry because of what's coming up in devotional service. One has to see what is going on, you know, because there's no real need of obstacles coming in the way of service, you know, because Krishna is the controller. And the material energy works according to Krishna's direction. So technically there'd be no reason for any obstacle to be there. So if there is an obstacle, there must be some reason for it. Either the obstacle's coming from us, because we're not in the proper attitude, so therefore the difficulty comes, or due to previous activities that we've done, you know, we're getting some, you know, small token of reaction for that. And so an obstacle is there. or there's something that we need to learn, so then it's arranged that the other person is doing, and we could say that the disturbs us, then generally it's because of something wrong on our side, you know? Unless it's something against proper etiquette or against this or that, that's another thing. But otherwise, you know, just that they're wrong, we're right. That's not the standard of wrong and right. Right means what is good for Krishna, wrong means what is not good for Krishna. That's the actual right and wrong. But if we take another right and wrong, then we'll always be frustrated. So you have to be very, very careful to see what's there, because ultimately Krishna is in control. Is that anything else on this? Yes. What does ordinary dealings, just the day-to-day activities, you know, it's not like specifically like we're doing, you know, specific deity worship or that, but when we're just dealing with people, we're talking with, you know, someone we have to work with, or friends or family members or authorities or just people we meet on the street. If it's just simple things, yes. That's what I mean, simple things, like, you know, you're doing something to do with, you know, cleaning the room or some other thing like that, then that we must be straightforward in all these kind of dealings. They must be done in the proper, you know, just very straightforward, very properly. Otherwise, then, if we're duplicitous in this, then that's not good, you know. Because this is how people know us, is through our dealings, what we say, how we act, and everything like that. So if we don't act in a straightforward way, for the devotees especially, anybody, but especially devotees, they pick up on these things very quickly. And then, or people who are, you know, kind of mature in the material world, they pick up that there's something wrong here, and they're not very comfortable. So we should always be straightforward in these dealings, like that. It doesn't mean that one is rough. This is sometimes taken, that being straightforward means that I'm just, you know, very rough and just whatever I think, that's what comes out of my mouth, because that's straightforward. You know, I don't like somebody, I just tell them like that, you know, in that mood and all that, and that's being straightforward. But that's not straightforward, that's being uncultured. But better that than just showing that you're very happy and everything like that and then make politics behind their back and try to mess up their life. You know, that's better, it's honest. It's honest. It's not necessarily straightforward. It's honest. Because honesty is just saying what it is. But the point is straightforward means is you deal, what needs to be said is said, but you also say it according to the position of the person, the time, place, and circumstance, you know, your own position, and in such a way that we try to not, you know, offend or upset the other person. Like that. So that is, all those things must be considered. And that's called culture. You know, being straightforward or being, you know, blunt doesn't mean it has to be nasty. You know, generally, most languages have a broad enough vocabulary that there's many words for the same point. And some of them are harsh and some of them are soft. So generally one would tend towards the soft ones, like that. And then if they don't work, then you may use a little stronger. But if it's not one's position, then we'll go to someone who it is their position and let them deal more strongly. Does that make sense? Yes.
How are activities of the demigods? They are all devotional service or they are material? So
it means it's mixed. The demigods, their position, they're devotees. They're always talked about as devotees. Anytime Prabhupada refers to them in the Bhagavatam, in the pastimes, they're devotees. But they're kanistas. They're materialistic devotees. So they're on the heavenly planets because they're there to enjoy. This is not so much talking about necessarily the residents of the heavenly planets. They're there also. That's also there. But specifically more those who are the actual controllers, the 33 million. Because they are devotees who have material desire, are still interested in controlling, enjoying money, wealth, facility, good clothes, good food, all these things. It mentions that in the Brahma Samhita. Shukter yameva nigama patitaistu vatsalam. No, it's after that. No, it's after that. Oh well, whatever. It mentions there that they worship the Lord for their chariots, their helmets, their ornaments, their positions, their power, all these different things. So they're considered devotees because they've approached the Lord for these things. And they're because a devotee is always special. Doesn't matter what the position. Even they're materialistic, they're still special. Because they're devotion. Just they're not very deeply realized. So because of this, then it's not considered the best platform. There it's called third class. Well, when they're not worried at all about themselves and material thing, then it's first class. Second class is in between. So they want all these things, so that's how these people come. Because they have to be devotees, otherwise in these positions they'll take too badly advantage. Right? We see of them, you generally hear very little happening, minimal, sometimes here and there, happening with other demigods that are how you say, in species are below Indra. Like that. So very minimal ever happens with them. You very little hear of any improper behavior with, you know, Agni or this one or that one. Sometimes, a little bit, very minimal. Indra, a lot of trouble because that position is specifically, you know, he's too big. He's in control of everything. You know, his wife is the material form of the goddess of fortune. Indrani is the goddess of fortune. But she's the one that gives material wealth. So when you see Lakshmi, where, you know, she's got her hands up and money is pouring out like anything, and, you know, the elephants are there and the whole thing's happening like this and everybody's worshipping and that's what they want, that's not Vishnu's Lakshmi, because you don't see Vishnu there. Lakshmi is never without Vishnu. That is her expansion, material expansion. That's Indra's wife. But very few understand the point. Because all they care about is they get their money. And she is Lakshmi, so they worship her. Like that. So when it says that Draupadi was a goddess of fortune, she is that Lakshmi. Otherwise you're wondering, how is it she's married to Arjuna and everybody else? Because she's Indrani. Like that. Because the point is the money is coming through the goddess of fortune. But if it is, we're not on that platform of devotional service where Krishna directly gives, or the goddess of fortune directly gives. They're arranging that the devotees get, but through her. Right? And when we come to a more elevated, they may directly give. And then if you're not a devotee at all, then it's she's giving. Right? Because it's material. It's material wealth. But she also gives spiritual wealth on the order of the Lord. Right? Because the energy is just like hot and cold, right? The electricity can heat and can cool. So yoga maya is both the internal and the external. Just depending upon how you see it, right? You see this as material, the bamboo. You're dealing with mahamaya. You see that this is, you know, the pillar holding up Krishna's temple, so it has the shakti of Balaram, and this is yoga maya. It just depends upon how we see it. She reciprocates with us as we reciprocate with her, same like Krishna. Right. So like that, then Indra then gets into more problem. Because he's got more control in this and that. But they have to be devotees, otherwise how will they do their duties, go on, how they have fear of the Lord. You know, same kind of power and everything, but no interest in the Lord, that's called the demons. So devotees, those positions are all taken by devotees. So devotees have to be serious, careful. Otherwise, they're there. Or if they're attracted by you know, following very nicely the rules and regulations and all that, and you know, very detached and in the mode of goodness, they can end up as Prajapatis and Jana Loka. No, that's Mahar. You know, then if they're into, tapasya and these kind of things, they're very austere and those kind of things, they can end up, and that's their main attraction or attachment, they can end up on Tapaloka. They're into knowledge and jnana and all these different technical little things, they can end up on Tapaloka. Janaloka. Or, you know, or on Satyaloka with Lord Brahma. But the point is they still have some material desire is there, and they are actively pursuing it. So then this is a very serious option, because it mentions a devotee who is not that advanced and gets distracted goes to the heavenly planets. Like that. So if they're very small, then it may be just as a resident there. But it can also be for longer if they're interested in position and all that kind of thing. That's very prominent. Because it says according to what distracts them from their devotional service. Right? So the resident means they've done devotional service, they've fallen. But they're performing the devotional service, but they want all these things. They want power, they want all these different things. And they'll fight over it and make politics over it and find like that. Krishna will give it. But then, you know, why be a temple president? You can be, you know, one of the presiding demigods for, you know, 72 Mahayugas, right? As long as Indra's there, all those demigods are in those positions. When he changes, they all change. Except for the ones bigger than him. But anyone below him, then they all change. Like that. So you can, you know, you'll get that position. So one has to be careful of these things. That one is performing because that is the nature. And this is the way you're going to purify yourself, by engaging that in Krishna's service. Then there's no problem. Then one can, you know, have position and lead and control and do so many things, and it only purifies one. But if one is attached to it, then that contamination may lead to these kind of arrangements. Like that. Because they're devotees who are doing these things. They're devotees. They're not someone else. You can't have non-devotees have the position that they have over the universe. Because they have to have respect for the Lord. They have to have, you know, faith in the Lord and all these things. We see when the demigods, everything goes wrong, means they've already tried all their prowess and power and influence and everything and weaponries, and then that doesn't work. Then they go to the Lord. They don't think of some new plan. No, the demons, they do. They get defeated in battle, this and that. What do? Then, you know, Sukracharya works out the, you know, Sanjivani, you know, mantras and like this. Then they'll bring each other back to life. And they don't turn to the Lord. Never turn to the Lord. Yeah. But the devotees turn to the Lord at some point or another. Yes?
I heard once that the sun universe is where demigods and devotees. It's like somebody was saying that in the Shirupura, and I haven't seen it myself. There's some stories when the Shingadeva appears and he doesn't throw any of the boons given by Brahma to Hiranyakashipu with the stairs in the front stairs away, because Brahma wasn't a devotee, so the Shingadeva didn't feel obliged to follow.
Oh no, it may be when the demigod is in their position that they forget about devotional service. But they got in that position because of devotional service. Like that. That is the point. There's we mentioned the other day, it's any generally position of, you know, proper position that one has is due to devotional service. Maybe unknown devotional service. There's something. Yeah. So they get there, but they forget. Like you see, Indra's always forgetting. Because he's got so much wealth and so much facility and all that. He becomes so proud. It means all the demigods above him who are in no way under his control, but because it's the Lord's arrangement that he's the king of the universe, they come and sit in, like the Saptarishis. There's no question that he can control them. They're more powerful than him because of their position. Above him, they all live as Brahmins. They don't care for running the universe. So they have their positions, their duties. They come sit in his court and go along with the whole show because it's the Lord's show. But as far as power, you know, they can take him out in a moment. Right? Indra is sitting there. Nahusha was in the position of Indra, and he's telling the... So he has all the facilities and powers and all that, and he's telling, Agastya to go quicker. You know, he's carrying the palanquin. And the palanquin, you have, you know, people in all the four corners carrying the poles. So in the other three, then they're all like full-size persons. And Agastya, he is alone in the front, one of the front ones. So he's only the size of the thumb. So you can imagine that there's a very steep angle on this palanquin. It must be highly uncomfortable to ride in it, right? But unalloyed, unbridled lust, then Nahusha is riding in this because if he comes in this palanquin, which is carried by the Saptarishis, then Indrani says she'll spend time with him. So then, you know, she doesn't know what to do because this is not her husband. He's in the seat, but this is not her husband. His husband's hiding in a lotus stem somewhere because of some other insanity that he got himself into, you know. So, like this, so, you know, so it does get pretty wild up there also. We're not the only ones with problems, right? So then she goes to the Saptarishis, and Agastya says, don't worry, just tell him like this, that if he comes to her palace in a palanquin carried by the Saptarishis, then no problem. So then he calls for the Saptarishis and tell them to arrange a palanquin. You know, first of all, he should have thought, you know, I can't have the Saptarishis carry me in a palanquin. That should have been the first thing he thought. But due to lust, he was not overly endowed with such intelligence, right? From lust, then intelligence is lost. So then he arranged that they do, and then they're carrying, and then they're going along. And because Agastya is very small, so you can imagine when he steps, you know, he's only stepping a few inches at a time. Plus, you're sitting there like this in your palanquin. So it must have been a little annoying for him. And he's very anxious, so he wants to get there quickly. So then, you know, he's probably already halfway leaning out of the palanquin and holding on for his life to keep from falling out. And so he looks at Agastya and tells him to go quicker. So one of the words in Sanskrit for going quicker is sarpa, because snakes move very quick, you know, so it's like they move fast. So he told him, sarpa, sarpa. And Agastya looked at him, okay, so you become a sarpa. And then you had this monstrous snake then sitting in the palanquin, which then, you know, slithered off somewhere. I don't know what happened in the Nahusha after that, but whatever. So, you know, these things are going on. So it's not that Indra has power over them. They have power over him, but because they're Brahmins, they're not interested. They're not interested in power and position and all that. They're in those positions because of attachment to their attachment to detachment, you know, or attachment to you know, how you say, perfect, regulated, how you say, dutiful household life, or attachment to gyan, like that, or just so much being situated in the mode of goodness, like this. They're attached to these things. So then they end up in those positions. So they're more powerful. While then Indra is Indra on down, they're attached to their senses and facilities, like that. Like that. So there's a dividing line in the demigods between those who are attached to the senses, those who are not attached to the senses. Like that. So that is, you know, we see that. We see in devotional, this is the difference between Nishkam Karma Yoga and Sakam. So if one is in the practice of Nishkam, then, you know, that's one thing. If one's in the practice of Sakam, then there is a, that is an option that one could end up in one of these positions in the heavenly planets. So they must be respected because they're devotees. But the problem is they many times forget they're devotees. Sometimes they remember, sometimes not. Like we see that time when Narad Muni had been cursed to be a Gandharva. The demigods are having a big Sankirtan. They're doing Kirtan of the Lord's name. So he was coming in that Kirtan and, you know, with all his friends and all that, and, you know, singing all kinds of fun, you know, ways to please the ladies. And he was not in any way overly worried about the Kirtan. You know, he was worried about singing and pleasing the women. So then the other demigods, being a little annoyed with that, then they told him, since you're so much into all the ladies and looking good and all that, and, you know, you're posturing and everything, so why don't you just, you know, leave the heavenly planets, because this is not your place, and go down to the earthly planet where there's more passion like this, and not only that, why don't you appear as a Shudra, because Shudras are very into their body, you know? So therefore, you know, like that. So then his next birth was as the son of a maidservant. So they do their Sankirtan and this and that, you know, now and again. But they can also forget. They can forget. Like Garuda comes to the heavenly planets and then they all fight with him over this nectar. You know, yeah, things like this. You know, they fight with Krishna. Right? Krishna comes to the Parijata flower and they fight with Krishna. So like that, they forget. They forget. So many occasions where they forget. You know?
Upendra sits in Indra's court. Expansion of Krishna.
Yeah. Well, Upendra's mom and dad.
So he's there and he has carries with all the...
Yeah, because he's one of the 12 Adityas, the 12 sons of Aditi. Then he's one of them. So Indra's his brother. So he sits there with them and this and that. No, but Indra—it means this. Indra has his good days also. You know, you know, it's not that it's always bad days, but it's just he seems to have a greater percentage of bad days compared to others. You know, and because he's, you know, they're devotees, so generally whatever happens, it's with other sages or devotees are like this. You know. Just he gets overly worried about these things, you know, like that. You know. You have a Brahmin, you know, you have the Brahmin, the temple president, you have the Brahmin in the temple, or the head pujari, and he says it should be done one way, and the head pujari says, you know, hey, this is not according to the rules, you know, the deity worship has to go this way. And so the temple president is trying to push it, and because he said it and he's the authority, and now he's feeling embarrassed, you know, so he can't go back on his word in the temple. And the head pujari then starts grumbling to other pujaris and other senior men in the temple or visiting sannyasis or the GBC that, you know, this is not proper. He doesn't know what he's talking about in deity worship and all that. So then the president will see this as politics and then, you know, move to arrange that this head pujari is removed from the temple. Like that. Does this sound familiar or not? Okay, so what does Indra do? He has a big sacrifice, wants to do. He doesn't want to do it, right? The temple president wants to be head of the pujari department? No. So then he gets Vishwaroop. Vishwaroop is doing his thing, and his family marries off a little something on the side, and then he cuts his head off. You know? Like that, or someone else is coming up. You see Markandeya is there doing his penances and austerities and that, and he thinks, uh-oh, you know, here's another sage becoming too powerful, right? Sages generally are not at all interested in becoming Indra, right? It means Vishwamitra, he wanted to become a Brahma Rishi. Brahma Rishis are way be above Indra, He couldn't care less about controlling the universe. He just wanted to be recognized by Vashishta as a Brahma Rishi. Means Vashishta is a Brahma Rishi. And he wanted, not even just Brahma should say, yes, you're a Brahma Rishi means you're born as a son of Lord Brahma. Right? And you're in the capacity of Rishi. Like Narad Muni, Vashishta, Bhrigu, like this. They're Brahma Rishis. Right? Deva Rishi means a Rishi amongst the demigods. Brahma Rishi means one of the sons of Brahma who's a Rishi. He wanted to be recognized as a Brahma Rishi, right? You can't be a Brahma Rishi unless you're born a Brahma. But he had to be. So then finally Brahma says, yes, you're a Brahma Rishi. That's not enough. Vashishta has to say he's a Brahma Rishi. Right? Because he has such enmity and jealousy with Vashishta. So Vashishta has to come and say, yes, you're a Brahma Rishi. Then he's happy. So he's not at all interested in his position. But still, Indra has to say it, send Menaka to harass him, you know. But because he has desire, therefore Menaka did catch his attention. But Markandeya, you know, he sends down all Rumba and all the other ones like this and that, and they do their whole thing, and Spring Personified is there, and everything's happening, the ladies are dancing, the music's happening, and Cupid's saying, oh, everything's perfect, shoots his arrow, nothing happens, and they go, let's get out of here before we get turned into ashes. You know, like that, you know. And then, whatever. So then, you know, they find out that Markandeya wasn't interested. So then they offer their apologies and all that. And so it's like Indra sometimes, you know, like this, just gets overwhelmed by his position and does these things. So it's not an uncommon thing, right? The devotees then by devotional service manifest all the qualities of the demigods. So sometimes the demigods also have bad qualities. So we see them, they're all manifested, the good, the bad, like that. Therefore, this idea that the stories of the Bhagavatam have nothing to do with our present-day situation is not understood. Right? Otherwise, where is the book, or where is the person who can speak on every situation materially? Right? What classroom deals with every situation that all 5 billion people on the planet might experience? Right? Never. They speak on the main points and then give some main examples, and by your intelligence you're supposed to connect them. Right? That means that is your area. You can't connect. Right? Like say you're doing Sankirtan, book distribution. Book distributor can teach you some main points and some main types of people and situations, and then you go and then you have to work out the rest of the details yourself. They can't tell you each and every one. You know, okay, you know, middle aged, you know, fat lady with, you know, how do you say, you know, what is it?
Freckles.
Yeah, freckles and the blue tinted hair. You know, she comes along. And she's got a big nose, and then, you know, and she's wearing a red dress, so you have to say this. You know, and if she says I'm wearing a blue dress, then her mood's different. You got to say, like, they can't get into these things. Right? You work those out yourself. So the same way is you have to be able to see that the Bhagavatam stories apply in our life. You know? It's not that unless we have crowns and swords and fly around in swan planes, it doesn't apply to us. Right? Right? It applies because these are the mentalities. The mentalities are there. So that, does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Yeah. So this is the reality. Right there. Or at least it's a part of the reality. There's a lot more to the reality. This is. Yes.
My Kumar explained one class to me. The difference between this, the devotees in the material world, like the great, great sages, and the devotees in the spiritual world, is that the devotees in the material world, they consider them the servants of Vishnu or Krishna. Whereas the devotees in the spiritual world consider themselves the servant of Vishnu.
Ah, this is a very nice point. Heard that? Is that the demigods and the sages and all that, they feel themselves to be the servants of the Lord, right? So therefore, they are in those positions. While the residents of the spiritual world, those devotees, they consider themselves to be the servant of the servant of the Lord. That is the difference. Very nice point. Sahota Maharaj made this point. Anything else in this? Yes.
Actually, you're talking about respecting position coming from the demigod section. There's a reason that because the demigods were the servant of Krishna, that we should respect the position and so forth with our authorities. And you also gave the example of someone who's a materialistic authority, and we should still respect their position.
Yeah, because all positions come from the Lord. All positions come from the Lord. Means Krishna is the original father. So the potency of father comes from the Lord. The potency of mother comes from the Lord. Right? The potency of elder brother, elder, everything comes from the Lord. You know? So that position is respected, even if the person does not follow that nicely. You know? So like that. It's not that, well, when they follow properly, I can respect. You know? They can't follow properly if you don't respect in the first place. You can't be a leader of a bunch of people who are not going to follow you until you get your act together. Right? It's a cooperation. That's an impersonal approach to the situation, because it's personal relationship. They're making this much endeavor, this much, then is naturally the reciprocation. So the respect may be greater or smaller, but it can't not be there. It's like all women are respected as mother. They may or may not act as mother, but they have to be respected. It's the position, right? Someone senior to you, you know, senior devotee, they have to be respected. Like that, in dealings. It doesn't mean that, you know, worship or other things may be there. That's something that must be there. Right? Want to say something, Mataji?
Can you say an example?
Yeah. 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 You understand that? So Dhritarashtra means he's not supposed to be the king at all. But because he is the, you know, the uncle. You know, so he's in a senior position. He's still respected, and it goes on. The kingdom's being run. It's going on nicely. You know? He knows how to run the kingdom. But because he's, you know, basically spiritually blind, then there's a problem. And his son is also spiritually blind, though he knows technically how to run a kingdom. Isn't there a chapter in the Mahabharata after his thigh is broken where Bhima goes and hears from him about running kingdoms and stuff like that? No, from Duryodhana. No. What, they go and hear from Dhritarashtra? Something like that. We see that goes on, just like Lakshman is asked by Ramachandra to go hear from Ravana about, you know, management of the kingdom, because he ran a perfect kingdom. Problem was, it was not connected to Krishna. Right. So this is Yukta Vairagya, is that whatever is there in the material world can be engaged in Krishna's service. You just have to add Krishna. So he knew perfectly how to manage, but he was not Krishna conscious. You know? So Dhritarashtra, he knew how to manage, but it wasn't his position, because the king should not be blind. Otherwise, he can't really perform his duties nicely. He can't go around and do everything. Though somehow or another, it was going nicely because of so many of his, you know, good assistants and things like that. Then things were happening. But they were respecting him. Even after the war, and, you know, he's tried to kill Bhima and this and that. You know, so then whose toe got burnt? By Gandhari? Yudhishthira. Yudhishthira's toe got burnt by Gandhari. you know, under the glance, he was so angry that even just a little bit of that glance came under the cloth and fell on his toe. Like that, but still, he's keeping them in the palace and giving them all royal treatment. They have no power, but etiquette. So this is a very fine point. To offer respect, but that respect doesn't mean, you know, control and power. This is a very fine point. This is basically why it's so hard to make it, these fine etiquettes work in the Western culture. Just like this. All women are mother. They must be respected. The temple president must deal properly with all of them, even though they're junior to him and maybe in his care, because they're mother, he has to respect them. Even if you say they're in daughter, they're still respected. Like it's mentioned that the Brahma wedding means when the daughter is respected by the father with all kinds of jewels, ornaments, nice clothes, and all these things just before the marriage, and then she's given in charity to a qualified boy. That's the Brahma wedding. So she's respected by all these different things. So facilities this and that. So the temple president, then he may respect his mother and different things like that, and he deals with them as mother. The problem may be seen that then these mothers want to tell him how to run his temple. Because they're in the position of mother, so that means they're superior, senior to him. So now they can tell him what to do. But it doesn't work like that. Everybody has their line of control, right? Like between every person or group of persons or like that, there's a, you know, like a demilitarized zone there, you know? So it doesn't cross. So etiquette, they're treated as senior. But as far as position and control, the temple president's over everybody. Like this. So when these fineness of etiquette can be understood and practiced, then we'll see that everything can run very, very nicely. Problem comes is that one side or the other, it's that either the president's control, so everybody else is under, therefore they can treat them however they like, or if they respect them, then whoever they respect them, they just run right over the person's head. So because of these two, you know, major swings in the pendulum, there's no question of any kind of sane social interaction. It just can't happen. Because you have to be able to respect all living entities at the same time as everybody has their position. You know? That's the thing. It's not so gross. I'm in control, that means everything goes my way. You know? One may have control, one's in the position, one has the authority, the responsibility, but they take advice from others, they ask others their opinions, they do all these things. But the decision that they take is theirs. So that means if things are good, they get the credit, if things are bad, they get the blame. So if we're not willing to give the credit, we can't give the blame. And if they're not willing to take the blame, they shouldn't take the credit. So it goes both ways. That's the thing. Yeah.
Sister, when you're saying that, so it's very difficult if that etiquette isn't in place to actually open up communication and share different knowledge or experience, things like that.
Yes, that means difficulty is there, but the point is one is supposed to, even within that, find like-minded personalities who you can share and are doing same kind of service or have the same kind of similar situation or mentality, that there's a good relationship, and that's where you're going to be, your main intimate association is going to be, like that. Though one can deal with anybody under any circumstance and behave properly, you know. That is there. But that takes practice. You know, it takes practice. So even in the Vedic culture, they would go to the Gurukul, they would learn. They would learn from their parents, they would learn from their teachers, you know, learn from others in the community. And this way they would be trained and become good. You know? Like Bhima is always, you know, every second moment is just, you know, waiting to pick up his club and bonk, you know, Duryodhana over the head. but because of his respect for his older brother, he doesn't do it. Otherwise, if Yudhishthir, all Yudhishthir would even just have to give a half of a quarter of a fraction of a nod, and Duryodhana would be history. You know, it wouldn't take more than that, because Yudhishthir says we have to be patient, we have to be this, that, all these things. You know, so he tolerates. You know, Draupadi's the same. She's freaking out, but she, you know, and the only one that she can really get into and get down with and talk all these kind of things and get upset and angry and all that is with Bhima. But because of Yudhishthir, then everything's peaceful. You know? So it's, one finds like-minded persons, but one can deal with everybody. So, but it takes, you know, that training must be there. So Prabhupada's given us so much in the books to be trained in. So much is there. We just have to try. We may not be perfect, but we have to try. Is that okay? Yes.
But it is said that when someone is in a position because they got the power, though they're not like the Krishna conscious, we should still respect them.
Yeah.
But to what extent actually, like, we should give that respect to them?
Respect means their position is there, so therefore we deal properly. We'll use proper words when we speak. We won't break the etiquettes of exchange of between a junior and a senior. It doesn't mean that we won't explain to them that, you know, we don't feel that what they're saying is proper because of lack of Krishna consciousness. They feel that Prabhupada's saying like this or others have said like this. So it's a problem. And so if it's too much of a problem, then one should go to a place where one can accept that authority. But one doesn't make big politics, one doesn't say so many things and behave in a nasty way. You don't like, go somewhere else. You know? But you can't misbehave, that's the point. Right? Because there's others that are there, that it's their duty to take care of this person. If we're in that position, we'll take care. If we're not in that position, we have our own worries, you know, like that. So we do those things. If one is attached to the facilities of that temple and is not going to listen to the authorities, that's not proper. You know, just like we see Drona and Bhishma and that, they're attached to the facilities, the respect that they've been given. They're obligated, right? They're obligated because of so much has been given to them. So even though Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra are wrong, then they stayed like that. Otherwise they didn't like Vidura. He's telling his brother so much how he should behave, not his brother, his brother and his nephew, how to behave, and then they just say, you know, this is all one, you know, just we don't want you around here. So he just goes. He doesn't take anything with him. He doesn't make politics and tries to take the temple with him or, you know, and everything like that. He just puts his bow in the corner and walks out. And then he gets down to the real business. Okay, I tried to deal in all these proper Varnashram things and tell him how to do and all this and that, seeing that he is Dharmaraj, who happens to know every rule frontwards and backwards. And they didn't want to listen, okay, so then let's do something real, you know, like spiritual life. And so he went and found Maitreya and heard from him. Like that. So this is there. This is the thing. You know? So it's responsibilities there all the way around. You never have a situation where it all goes one way. It's always two ways. Like that. You know, if you don't want to follow any authority, then you shouldn't live in a place where there is an authority. And you go out on your own. In the past, you used to go to the jungle. Right? Previously, the jungles were made of trees. Now they're made of cement. So you just go to some place in the, you know, some cement jungle somewhere and enjoy yourself there. You know? Set up your own temple or whatever. Just, you know, like that. But otherwise, one has to respect authority. Right? That is there.
That's many times you can notice that those who have difficulty respecting authority, they expect everybody else to see their authority.
They're an authority.
But how does this work? It's like it seems very, very inconsistent.
No, it's very consistent. It's very consistent because you only see the qualities you have. Right? So they don't respect authority. They see that in others or this or that. And they expect others to have that quality. Right? But they're only seeing their own quality. This is also... Someone's trained, they can see others' qualities. But generally you're trained to see the qualities in your own area. So those, specifically those qualities you've been purified of, those are the ones you can see best and help others in. Those qualities that you see in others that you don't recognize are your own qualities and you haven't been purified of, you can't correct anybody in them. Though it will be your focus, you'll always talk about it and be very worried that people don't do it. Right? So if you're able to affect change in someone else, that means that there's purity in that side on their own nature. Right? Because every positive has a negative. So if they have the positive, they can deal with the negative from that side. You see the qualities you have. Like we have eyes. We have certain kind of eyes. We can only see what these eyes see. Other animals see different things. Or hear different things, or taste, all these different. So we see through our purview of our senses. In our mind, that's all we're dealing with. That's all we can see. We can't see something else. Like a thermometer can only check temperature. You can't tell if something's sweet or sour or bitter or hot. It can't tell that. So with the mind we have, the senses we have, we can only perceive certain qualities, and those qualities are the same ones we have. That's all we can see. We can't see something else. How we'll see? Right? Like that. Like a small child doesn't see so many qualities because they themselves don't have them. Right? Like a small child has no lust. They can't perceive lust. You're going to put lust right in front of them. They can't understand it because they don't have it. But as soon as they hit, puberty, then they understand. They see it. Before that, they don't see it. I can't see. So if we're always saying, this guy is a megalomaniac, then there's every possibility we have the same quality, right? Otherwise, if it wasn't such a common theme, then how is it that the karmis, they themselves also see the same thing? They have that, I don't know who is the author, but Animal Farm? I don't know, it's one of those books you had to read in 7th grade or something. Who? Huh? Oh, yeah. So, he just saw again and again and again, what it was based on the Russian Revolution. Is that you had the Tsar there, and he was acting in a certain way and controlling and enjoying and making a mess of everything. And then all the animals of the farm, means the farmer was the czar, and the animals were the people. And then when they all got together, the people all got together, the animals got together, rose up against the farmer, killed the farmer, and then they decided we'll run the farm together. Right? So then they're all running. So then naturally then the ones that are more smart, they kind of gravitate to the top. And so then after a while you see that the pigs move into the farmer's house, and they're wearing the clothes, and they sit at the tables, and they eat, and all these things, and then they're having the animals do all the same things that the farmer used to have them do. So then, I forget which one of the animals, he went into there, and he was looking around, and he was looking from pig to pig, and didn't see any difference in their mentality, behavior, anything, than that of the farmer. You know, so when they throw someone out, get in the same position, they do the same thing. You know, it's there. It's common. It's a common principle of revolution, right? They got rid of Louis what 16th, and then Robespierre is sitting in the seat, and then the people threw him out for the same thing. Right? So it's very common. It's very common. They may not put their finger on it, but it's here, that person did. It's a very observable fact that you only have your mind, intelligence, senses, and ego to view the world with. So you either view it for the eyes of Shastra in a detached way, then you're able to see qualities that are there that are very broad, that are described by Shastra. Otherwise, if I'm just going by, I feel it in my heart, then you can only see the qualities that you yourself have. You can't see other qualities. It's impossible. Otherwise, you're using the instruments that you have created. Your senses are created by your mind. Your previous life's mind created this body. Right? And that is based on your ego. So you don't have any other tools. So that's what you see. So that's not a problem. The thing is it's not a problem because every quality has its good and bad side. Right? In the material world, everything's good and bad. So you just have to purify and it's fine. Someone has a ability in power. Power is not at all a problem. No one sees any problem with power in Prithu, Bharat Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, you know, Prahlad Maharaj. Great power, beyond just emperor of the planet, emperor of the universe. No one has any problem. Everybody's very happy. Everybody wants a good leader, you know. Very few people have the ability and want to control the whole thing day in, day out. It's a headache. You have that nature, it's fine. But in its pure state. So the problem is not you throw this person out, you purify the person. The person's too far from purity to make it work. They may have to go into a situation where it's going to be less problem on people. But otherwise, you purify a manager by management. Right? You purify a Brahmin by brahminical duties. You know, you purify a Shudra by art. That's all engaged in the Lord's service. There's not another system. I mean, the Gita doesn't mention something different from this. It's saying, do your duties for Krishna. Everyone acts according to their nature. Right? Arjuna wanted to give up Kshatriya nature, take up brahminical occupational duties. And Arjuna said, no, you'll fight anyway. You're a Kshatriya, you're going to fight anyway. Just you'll either fight for me or you'll fight for yourself. So that's the choice. So this is, we have to understand. So it's a matter of, that's why Prabhupada was so interested in just seeing that everybody engage in devotional service, do something according to their nature, you know, they're satisfied in doing, and do it for Krishna, because then they're purified. Then everything's wonderful. So that we do see those qualities, it's not a problem. We simply have to purify our own qualities, because they're material qualities. They're engaged in Krishna's service. What does it matter? No? What does it matter what the qualities are? They have their pure form. We endeavor to remove the anarthas and come to that platform of purity. Then we'll be able to engage those qualities nicely. But in the meantime, we engage them even though they're not so pure, but we're humble. Like that. And it works very nice. Does that make any sense?
By trying to engage them, you'd have to become humble just because you'd be seeing so much nonsense coming up in the process of seeing.
Yeah. But the point is we understand we ourselves have so much nonsense. So yeah. We worry about that. Yeah. If we're in a position to say something, someone is a dependent or in some way we have, you know, we have to give some direction, then we might point those out. That's why it's also said that they must be similar nature. Right? It means you associate with those who are more advanced than you, who are of the same nature. Because then you understand how they behave, you understand how they speak, they understand how you behave and how you speak. Right? Because the point is you take your nature, engage it in Krishna's service, you become purified, you go back to Godhead. Right? Because it doesn't matter what the varna or ashram is. A varna has its particular nature and what it's good for, and its position in the overall working of society. The ashrams have their position and nature in the overall workings. So if it's engaged in Krishna's service, it's perfect. Because it's a tool for going back to Godhead. We're not trying to become perfect varnashramites. We're just trying to, as best as we can, follow the system, because this is how we're going to engage our conditioned nature. Right? But we're not worried about the positions. But we know that someone in Brahminical position, then they're the teachers, they do the puja, they do this and that, and they're the authorities in this. The Kshatriyas are the authorities in management. You know, the Vaishyas are the authorities in business. You know? The Shudras are the authority in the arts. So it's like you have somebody and they want to know about something. It doesn't matter who he can be, the president of the United States. If he wants to build a building, he gets a shudra, calls in a shudra, an engineer, and says, how do we build this building? He can't say, well, I'm the president of the United States, we're going to do it like this. You know, he'd be foolish. Right? Because it's not his area. So whatever the area, it all works together. You need all of it to make a society. We don't want, then we go to the forest. You know, forest is always there. You know, it's always waiting for us. You know, Prabhupada mentioned the Himalayas could maintain the whole population of the whole planet. So things get too rough, then it's always an option. You know, like that.
Huh?
It does get a little cold. That's the only like that. But you know, just have to work with that. It also gets cold in Sweden. You know? This is a final point in this section, and which also matches in with what's been discussed before. Not giving pain to any living entity. This is the statement of Mahabharata. Person who does not disturb or cause painful action in the mind of any living entity, who treats everyone just like a loving father does his children, whose heart is so pure, certainly very soon becomes favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In so-called civilized society, there is sometimes agitation against cruelty to animals. But at the same time, regular slaughterhouses are always maintained. A Vaishnava is not like that. A Vaishnava can never support animal slaughter or even give pain to every living entity. So it's one of the common qualities. I mean, it means commonly quoted quality, commonly quoted uncommon qualities of the devotees in the scriptures. Well, that mentions the qualification to go back to Godhead, and one of them is that they're kind to all living entities. Like that, always. So they deal with everybody very, very nicely. So it's something to practice. Yes.
Doesn't that also mean preaching?
Yes. It also means preaching, because then that is giving the best welfare. So it's like the father takes care of the children. So by preaching, then you're actually giving the best. Because one who knows the knowledge, or one who knows Krishna consciousness, is actually in the senior position of the position of father over someone who doesn't. Right? The example is given of one. There was one of the demigods, then the son of one of the younger members of the community. Then the elder members of the community, he knew something, and they wanted to learn it, so they went to him. So even though they're old enough to be his father, you know, and the family members, must have been uncles and other people like this. Then he called them small sons, you know, in a very affectionate way. So they got very agitated because, you know, who is this, you know, kid telling us young children, you know, we're twice his age, you know. So they went to the demigods and they complained. And they said, no, no, what he has said is correct, because one who has knowledge, he is in the position of father, and one who doesn't have knowledge, he is in the position of the child. So he has called you correctly. Like that. So the preaching, then that is this mood of the loving father giving Krishna consciousness. Because one shouldn't become a mother, father, teacher, you know, leader, unless one can save the dependents from death. So one should preach. Okay, any last questions? Otherwise, we'll end. Yeah. So you're kind to them and not allowing them to commit any offenses by cleaning the place so nicely that they decide to go somewhere else. Main thing is the place has to be kept very clean. The cockroaches come when things are not so clean. Because cockroaches don't like clean places. They absolutely don't. So it's like, it's just, they hate it. They hate clean places. You know? They only like dirty places.
My question is there some instances where staff should be allowed to be
cockroach opera. Generally, you know, one will, you know, whatever it is, sweep them out, collect them up, get rid of them. But the thing is we have to get rid of the cause, which is generally dirt. That's generally, yeah. You know, it's just like in the yeah. Main thing is cleanliness. I think Prabhupada mentions that. May even be in the Deity Worship book. About if it's clean, the cockroaches won't be there. You know, or there may be one or two walk through or something like that. But you won't have hordes of them. That's only when places are dirty and never cleaned.
They ask Prabhupada that. We have infestation of usually the cockroaches or mice in the kitchen, and they say, can we kill them? Because they say, you are a demon, you should be killed.
Yeah. Main thing is if we can keep very clean, then generally these kind of things don't come up. Then you have to either start cleaning yourself, you know, like that, or in some way try to start influencing and bring up the standard, you know, like that. Oh, you mean the building, you just move into a new building? No. What I'm saying is the temple was in another place and it's shifting to a new place. Is that what you mean? Or you yourself, the temple was there with the devotees and you moved to the temple? Yeah, so then you just have to try to see if you can bring any influence there. But best is just start cleaning yourself. You just start cleaning and doing like that, and then slowly to catch on. You know, it may take some time, but it does.
Sink area was nowhere to just
genocide. It depends upon what you call a clear answer. I mean, there's some options. One is that no, what you did is perfectly 100% all right, and that's exactly what I'd do if I was in the situation. And anytime you find a sink full of cockroaches, you should just, you should just obliterate them all. That's one. Or, what you've done is a great sin and this and that, and then you should stand on your head, on top of a rasgulla for some time to purify yourself of the sin, or something like that, or chant,
feed a thousand eight cockroaches
to purify yourself, or it's going to be something in between. The point is we are, trying to avoid killing these living entities, because you can generally catch them, it's just, in the West you don't have the same facilities as you do in India. Like, coconut brooms are very excellent for catching cockroaches and other things like this, because you just stick it down there and they'll all run inside, and then you just take it wherever you want and shake it out. And then you go back and collect a few more. It's maybe slow, but it does the work. I've seen people do that. So the Western brooms aren't so expert at that. They're better at squashing them than they are. Main thing is just the whole area needs to be cleaned. Even if you shoo them out of there, you clean them all, clean that nicely, the sink and all that, they wouldn't come back, because they might come back and check it out, but they wouldn't stay, because it would be too clean for them. So like that, you just keep cleaning bigger and bigger until they'll move out. And it just takes more work. But it does work. Like that. So, and add this onto your list of you ask so many devotees. Okay. So then, next class will be chapter 8, the offenses to be avoided. So this will go through all the different seva aparads, offenses to the deity in deity worship and to the holy name. So we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Śrīla Prabhupāda ki Śrīla Rūpa Goswāmī Pāda ki Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki Jai Nitya Gaura Prema.